Welcome to the UFO Files.
You know, we've been talking about government disclosure for some time here on the UFO Files. There have been efforts by the Brazilian government, which have been fairly successful, by the Air Force at least. Stephen Bassett here in the United States has done quite well with his conferences, the ex-conferences in Washington. And as you know, in September in Toronto, the Canadian government probably had the biggest step of all toward disclosure with the revelations by Paul Hellyer, former Minister of Defense. We have been listening to some of the chatter around, and it seems that a lot of people think there will be more revelations coming out of Canada very shortly, probably before the end of the year. So we thought we would pick up the phone and call Victor Vigiani. Vigiani was one of the people instrumental in promoting the Toronto conference in September that dealt with the entire subject of government disclosure. And some major revelations came out of the conference. We thought we'd ask Victor to come on the air. Thank goodness he decided that he would. We're going to talk to him and see if we can't get some more information. Victor, welcome to the show. It's cool here in the U.S. Fall has arrived. I guess it's even cooler up here.
We're heading down with the temperatures, Jerry. They're gradually getting lower and lower as the days go on. It was 16 or 17 degrees Celsius here a couple of days ago, and now we're down in the evenings to about 2 or 3 with a bit of a frost in the morning.
Yeah, it got a little chilly here today, too, as a matter of fact. Fall is finally arriving. You know, in September you had this symposium, and you made lots of news with it and lots of success. I've talked to lots of people about it, and I want to get into, first of all, the repercussions of it all. It's been a little while now, so you can judge.
My feeling is that, generally speaking, this is something that's being spoken about all around the planet. We had one of our speakers going to Italy just after the conference. He spoke, Stephen G. Bassett did, in Italy about a week and a half after the conference, and that conference there was a large one. They had many, many speakers. And the big buzz around there was the Toronto Exopolitics Symposium here in Toronto. So there's lots of people talking about it, and the repercussions on all of the UFO updates lists and all the chat lines and everything. There's a great response to it, and a lot of things are rolling because of it. A lot of residual information is coming down, and a lot of new initiatives are being sort of initiated.
Well, you know, on one hand, here in the U.S., I'm a little jealous of you in that you, or maybe envious is a better word, you were able to get a lot of media attention.
We were very surprised, Jerry, about the way the media reacted here in Canada. I think it really kind of it displays the difference. It really kind of establishes the difference between the Canadian media environment and perhaps the American media environment. We always think that because we share the North American continent together, that our media is somehow very similar. But this kind of proved that that's not the case. Our media jumped on this big time, and I was on several different national programs, morning shows, interviews, and a lot of coverage resulted because of it. The Toronto Star, which is the largest newspaper in Canada, the Globe and Mail, our only national newspaper that's big, and the National Post, and the Toronto Sun, which is owned by a large subsidiary here in Canada. All of these newspapers, covered the event very, very well with the interviews of both myself and Mike Bird and Paul Hellyer. So we're very pleased with the kind of coverage and the quality of the coverage that we got. So it's a groundbreaker for sure, and we're not exactly sure why, but I guess it just sort of points to the openness, potentially, of how our media reacts to this type of information without the overall media.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Victor. The next question to my mind, and you probably thought about this too, it's going pretty good. What next? What are you going to do next?
I don't want to be coy, Jerry.
Well, it's my job to ask.
And I want you to pry it loose from me too, but I'll be a little bit tough on this one. We've got something really, really heavy duty coming up, Jerry. And what it has to do with is Paul Hellyer, one of our major speakers, He was sort of the pivotal point in all of this. And because Paul Hellyer, he's the former national minister of defense here in Canada back in the Lester B. Pearson years from 1963 to 67. He was our minister of national defense, much the same as your
probably,
I guess,
as the secretary of defense.
Secretary of defense.
Right. And basically, if I understand things correctly, Paul was watching the Peter Jennings special, and it rung some
That's
bells.
Right, exactly. Sort of, I guess, awakened consciousness in him. He's an economic theorist. He has a lot of good insights into global economies, and he also did have a small interest in the UFO phenomenon, but not something that was significant. But after watching the Peter Jennings special and also reading the Philip Corso book, The Day After Roswell, which we can get into in a few moments. There's more information on that. He was sort of convinced that there's something very, very strong going on here. And I suppose with his position that he held as Minister of National Defense back in the mid-60s, I guess all the bells started to go off. And with the integrity of this man, if you were to meet him, he's an 82-year-old gentleman who's just as vital and as strong as anyone I know.
Well, didn't he just get off his honeymoon? Well, I think that speaks for itself.
He is a man of great integrity, of great energy, and to have someone like that come forward, the media was really struck by this, Gary. It was something that really hit hard, and not only with what Paul did, but the other speakers, Stephen G. Bassett and Stanton T. Friedman and Richard Dolan, the speakers were just absolutely breathtaking in their presentations, and everything went well. We had a beautiful academic setting at Convocation Hall in Toronto, and the presentations were just spellbounding. It was you could hear a pin drop, first of all, when Paul Hellyer walked into the room. It was almost like you were in church, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He walked in and he literally captivated the room, and did a great job in speaking and bringing forward his point. So it really had a great impact here in Canada, and I'm understanding now that it's rippling throughout the planet, which is a really... I'm not overstating that, I think, because there's a lot of interest in this.
Oh, I know there is, for a fact, and on our website alone, part about his speech and the video and all of that gets tremendous amounts of hits.
You have to be congratulated, and we want to really extend our appreciation. Both myself and Michael Bird want to express our appreciation to you, Jerry, for the kind of support that you've given us in hosting his speech. And I hope that perhaps once we get the other entities up and running, that you can assist us in that way too. But you've been a real support for us, and we do thank you, Jerry.
Well, we definitely want to be involved, Victor, any way we can. You mentioned your partner, Michael Bird. Why don't you tell me a little bit about him?
Well, Michael is, I've known Michael now for, gosh, probably going on 10, 12 years now. We met very informally to begin with at a very small UFO kind of social group gathering about 10 or 12 years ago. And from that, Michael and I became very close personal friends. And we did things socially, and we worked a little bit together in terms of bringing a small group that he had together regarding a UFO group, basically a discussion group, nothing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just grew. He became a little bit more involved in MUFON, and he was the regional director here in Ontario, Canada, one of our provinces here, regional director of MUFON. And then, as circumstances would have it, he eventually became the national director of MUFON here in Canada. And just after that appointment, or I guess coincidental with that appointment, both he and I have always been in sort of in sync with wanting to do something very, very powerfully to raise the level of awareness here in Canada and throughout the world, hopefully, about the UFO disclosure issue. And we wanted to bring forward the truth, Jerry. We were both very, very tired of the treatment that the UFO issue had been given in the media. And even within UFO groups, basically what had happened, a bit of history here, most UFO groups that I knew about, and I made it a point not to become very closely involved with groups like that because I for some reason, I just didn't have an affinity for that kind of thing. They basically what they did, Jerry, was catalog lights in the sky. They would investigate, you know, they would write a report and it would go into some sort of database and that would be the end of it. And that got very, very frustrating after a while. I did investigations myself, but it got very, very frustrating. In trying to come to grips with what this phenomenon really, really meant in terms of a global perspective. So what we've done is try to raise the level of, I guess, acuity, the level of awareness, and to create a real solid discourse about what these, funny lights in the sky are all about and what they really mean in terms of the global perspective. And we've come to some very strong conclusions about what they might be, and we're both convinced that both Michael and I now, through our history and what we've done through the exopolitical conference and symposium, we've come to grips with the fact that this is going to be a geopolitical movement unparalleled in human history as far as we're concerned. And once again, I don't want to sound overly dramatic, but when it comes down to the fact that we think and we know that A, the government knows what's going on, B, the general public is very, very ignorant and very naive about what this really means, and the media is somewhere in between there and being reluctant to cover this, we feel that we have a tremendously fertile ground upon which to build some roots and sow some seeds regarding the reality of the extraterrestrial issue here on
Victor,
the planet.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you here is that, well, I know Stephen Bassett very well, been involved with him for some time, and Stanton T. Friedman has been on the show many times, and this thing just appeared to be very groundbreaking to me up in Canada, and frankly, I want to ask you, maybe if you could separate the chaff for me and tell me really what we know. What do we know?
Oh, boy. I'm glad we've got a lot of time left. what do we know? You know, I thought about that in trying to prepare myself for our talk this evening. And what I do know for sure is, and it's a very general...
I mean, in other words, I'm trying to figure out if we can do it in a simple way, educated guessing or hypothesis is one thing, and then there's some things we must know for certain.
Well, I think with, first of all, the number of sightings that we have, you know, we have to go back to the number of sightings that we have both North America and I guess globally. This is a phenomena that strikes at the heart of the human consciousness. It strikes at the heart of human awareness. And these things are being seen on a global basis daily. So that's something that we do know for sure. People in Mexico are seeing these things. People in Bolivia are seeing these things. People in Europe are seeing them. In China, they're seeing them. They're seeing them all over the world. And I've investigated many of the really key sightings. Some of the ones that John Mack dealt with at the aerial school in Zimbabwe, for example. That sighting in itself with the young girls who saw the ship land or come close to the ground just outside of the aerial school while the teachers were having a staff meeting, and the young girls saw the ship and the beings skipping out of the...
Tell me a little bit about that. What were the beings? What did they look like?
They were basically grays. Basically.
Uh-huh.
That's what the girls described them as. As John Mack had them describe them both physically and in words, you know, in terms of description, verbal description, and they also drew pictures of them. So basically, they were grays, they were shorter, and they were moving out of the ship and almost jumping as one would picture an astronaut jumping on the moon with relatively little gravity. And this is the way the young girls describe these beings moving out of the ship and communicating with the young girls in a very specific way and telling them that that the world has become, as one of the girls says, that the world is becoming too technologized. That's the word that she used in describing what the being said to her. So we've got a situation where A, the contact was made very, very clearly and very clear in the visual acuity of these young girls, and the second of all, somehow these entities communicated with them telepathically. They didn't use words. And John Mack asked, "How did they tell you this?" And the girl said, "I heard it in my mind." And these are young girls that would have no reason. You know, 12 and 13-year-old girls, plus a lot of young ones who saw this too, who would have absolutely no reason to make up a story like this. You know, an extraterrestrial craft landing or a saucer. It was just far too much to believe that these kinds of things could be made up on the spot, especially when you get the number of children telling exactly the same story. And being a principal myself, in my years as an educator, I know what children are like. I have a very, very clear awareness and understanding of how children relate things and the authenticity that they use in describing something that they know is real. And you can tell it when a child is fabricating or embellishing something. These girls, and I've heard the interviews, tell a story that's as true as the day is long. So that kind of evidence, and you say, you know, what do we know? I use that as an example, Jerry, of a situation that we know something very, very bizarre is going on, something beyond our own limited understanding of what could possibly be an extraterrestrial situation. Most people don't understand what that would be like. So, you know, if you think of yourself driving along in a car and you see something in the sky and it darts around and does this and does that, your first impression is to explain it away as something, oh, well, it's just a light, it's just a refraction, or it's just a glistening of the moon or whatever. Your first reaction is to deny, or at least, limit the description of it. Well, it can't be something that's extraterrestrial. But when you really get down to it and talk to people about what they're seeing, these craft are doing some pretty amazing things. So what we're seeing for real, what we do know, we're seeing craft in the sky that are doing very, very bizarre things, moving at incredible speeds, stopping on a dime, reversing course, and doing things that no aircraft that we know. And the reports are far too consistent and too frequent to deny the existence that something very, very bizarre is going on in our sky. So when you ask, what do I know? That's one thing I know for sure. Something very bizarre
now, when,
is going
when we
on.
Talk about this and all the sightings, and you're right, there's a lot of commonality in a lot of the stories from wherever, all around the world. What's your best guess? Are we talking about many entities from different places, or orchestrated thing?
My best guess, and from the information that I have and the investigations I've done, the reading, the literature, and the speaking to some of the real experts in the field, our sense is that there are several civilizations that are involved in this, not just one. We could be dealing with a multiplicity of civilizations. And when you think about the possibilities of what the our own galaxy plus the universe has to offer to us in terms of sentient beings being on different planets or in different dimensions or where it happens to be, it's very, very likely that we're dealing with a multiplicity of entities. So it's not just one set of extraterrestrial beings. So my fix on that, Jerry, is that I believe that there is a coordinated, perhaps federation or gathering or whatever you want to call it, I liken it to a phone book, Jerry. It's a huge phone book with hundreds of thousands of names in it, and they all know each other's number. But you know what, Jerry? We're not in the telephone book yet, and that's my, you know, we're
that's an interesting analogy.
Yeah, we're the guys down the street with the party line, you know. With the old party lines. Do you remember those?
Yeah, sure.
And that's where we're at. You know, we're all sort of existing on our little, asphalt tarmac roads, moving along in our cars, and occasionally breaking the bonds of Earth and flying in these archaic little jets that depend on fossil fuels, and occasionally throwing up a little bit of a chemical-fueled rocket up into our own atmosphere and fiddling around in space. But we're making really feeble attempts to pretend that we're intellectual beings, but my sense is that we are so far behind whoever these individuals are. And my sense, Jerry, is that, and I've done some investigation with some scientists on this, one particular scientist who you need to really investigate. His name is David Grinspoon, and he wrote a beautifully, lovely, poetic book called Lonely Planets, The Natural Philosophy of Alien Life. And his estimation basically is that these entities, whoever they are, and there's a multiplicity, as I said, of them, they were developing interstellar travel when the human species was just beginning to walk upright. And you can imagine how long that is. We're talking 3, 4, 5 billion years. So just imagine how far these entities have come in that amount of time to engage in the kind of space travel or even interdimensional travel that they're capable of. And my sense is they have achieved the capacity to understand physics at a level that we just don't understand. They've achieved the capacity to move at or beyond light speed, or to move with it from one dimension to another. And I think that's what we're seeing.
And there seems to be some evidence, and even some scholars now are beginning to talk in terms of the new physics, for lack of a better term, which may be billions of years old.
As respected scientists, he's beginning to really kind of turn back the covers on some of the aspects of our own earthly physics that just don't fit in with what's happening, or what, for example, what pilots are seeing. Pilots are seeing things in the sky with a greater frequency than ever. And another great book that I would recommend to your listeners to grab a hold of by Jerome Clark, called Strange Skies, Pilot Encounters with UFOs. And this book is just filled with hundreds, literally hundreds of records of pilots seeing and tracking things in the sky. And we're not just talking about soft little lights. We're talking about metallic objects that hover around aircraft and circumnavigate aircraft that are moving at 6 or 7 feet around. And, you know, when pilots do this, Jerry, you wonder, these are trained people.
It leads me to my next question to you, and that's about, what do you think, there's contact on a government level, or does the government not know much more than we do? What's your hunch?
My sense, Jerry, is that in one way, they know a lot. I'm convinced that the American government, to a lesser degree the Canadian government, and Great Britain, and perhaps Belgium and the USSR, Mexico perhaps, Brazil is another key country. I think that they know what's going on. Whether they've had contact or not, I'm not willing to say. There's a lot of information that says that they have already had some sort of contact, but I don't necessarily agree with that. But I think the bottom line there, Jerry, they're just as confused as we are. They don't know what to make of this. Now, if there is some sort of clandestine deal that has been made or had been made in the past, as some people purport with the Greys, and you're allowed to do this and do that with our people, abduct them or do whatever in exchange for some technologies, that's a really big pill for me to swallow. Although I wouldn't be surprised, because this whole enterprise could be much more bizarre than we even can fathom.
Sure. You mentioned Colonel Corso earlier.
You take a look at that incident, or his whole history. He was handed some technology from his superior and said, here, find out how it works. What makes this stuff work? And then start to farm it out to different industrial complexes so that they can back engineer the stuff and figure out how we can use it here on the planet. Now, that kind of information, why would someone fabricate it would be one question that I would have. Why would he put his name on the line? Why would he put his family name on the line to fabricate an issue that's very easily to criticize? And many, many people have criticized this man for coming forward and saying some of the things he did, questioning his documents, questioning his agenda, questioning his moral certitude about what he did as a foreign, I believe he was in charge of foreign technology development in Washington, and he had access to the president. So I mean, this kind of information is very confusing on one level, but it also brings us a level of certainty that there is information out there that has to be investigated to the nth degree to find out what's really going on. So when you take a look at the whole ball of wax, there's a whole level of confusion, but yet there's a whole level of what I feel certainty, or what I call converging lines of evidence. It's all of this information, these lines of evidence that go this way and that way. It's like, remember you used to play pick up sticks as a kid? You throw the sticks on the carpet, and you have to pick them all up without moving them. And that's what I feel the UFO issue is like. You throw all of these sticks on the ground, and they converge into a meaningful whole. They mean something when you link all of the issues together. As Paula Harris, she wrote a book about what she called connecting the dots. And I think that's what we have to do. If we just look at one specific thing and focus on that alone, we don't get a really broad perspective on what's going on. We have to look at all of the different parts of this very, very complex puzzle and try to put it together and see where the converging lines of evidence lead us. And for me, someone who's investigated this for almost 30 years now, the converging lines of evidence prove to me without a shadow of a doubt that there's something very, very strange going on, I think it's extraterrestrial in nature, and it's just a matter of time before the government and media get the same conclusion. And that's why we did that's why we held the extra-political conference and symposium the way we did it. We feel there's something very, very strange going on, and the media has to know about it, and the global population needs to know about it. And that's why we did it.
Well, you know, we talk about our technology and the military surveillance, and especially now with, you can argue about the terrorist influence, whether it's serious or not as serious. But the point is, we are supposedly really looking around at everything. So the government must, I mean, we have all these sightings all the time. So the Canadian government, the American government, you know, the Europeans, they must know and detect these vehicles.
Yeah, well, that's another train of thought, that's another line of logic that I'd like to explore with you. There is absolutely no doubt, Jerry, and from my point of view, I have proof here. As a matter of fact, it's sitting on my desk right here in front of me. I have absolute conclusive proof that NORAD jets here in Canada have chased these things. And I went to the National Archives here in Ottawa and to the National Department of Defense, and I made a what you call down there freedom of information, mm-hmm. access to information.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just mm-hmm. a different name for the same sort of thing. And I made a request, and I received 117 pages of information, of reports that the government, the National Defense Department, has about the UFO question. And I received, within that document, I received 6 pages of what significant event here up in Canada, a NORAD situation where 3 F-16s were scrambled out of Vancouver, Comox Air Force in airport in Vancouver, and their task was to chase. We have 6 pages of NORAD reports called a significant event, where 3 F-16 jets, I believe it was 3, it could have been 2, I'd need to read through it, but at least 2 F-16 jets were tasked to track unknowns. Okay, so they went up, and as they were going up, a medical evacuation jet, a Lear jet, was also in sight of these things. So I've got the line-by-line description of what these jets were doing and what this medical evacuation jet saw. And these things were there, the pilot saw them, they dropped off out of sight, and the jets tried to find them and couldn't locate them. So in answer to your question, you know, NORAD is chasing these things on a daily basis, and we know that for a fact. And for some reason, our government is reticent to talk to us about that.
We get these sightings reports every week, and invariably you hear about military activity around them.
It almost goes without saying that When something happens like this, the first reaction of the government is to do something about it on their own terms, and then try to hide the fact that they're doing something about it. It's a recurring theme all of the time. And basically, and to be quite honest with you, we're getting very, very tired of being treated like children, Jerry. And that's one of the points of around the symposium. We're not children. We're very intelligent. And, you know, we're prone to our own human folly and the mistakes we make as human beings, but we're not children anymore. And for the government to say, they're there, little boys and girls, don't worry, we've got everything under control, and really these lights in the sky are nothing to worry about, that is so self-serving, that is so patronizing for our government, people who we elect to talk to us that way about a phenomenon we know really exists.
You know, on that score, I do think if disclosure from an official government source comes, it probably won't be from the U.S., United States. It'll be Canada or Brazil or Mexico or something like that. And because it seems that we in this country, I can talk about it since I'm here, have become far, far too... I guess establishmentarianism would be a good word.
We're living in an intellectual and informational vacuum.
Yeah, and we have more tools for intellectual information than ever before.
That's right. And what a conundrum that is. What a dilemma that is. We have so much information and so many tools with which to transmit and share that information. But the information that's real, the reality, the truth of what's really going on, is being withheld from us. So when you talk about, you know, who's going to release this information, I agree with you. Michael Bird and I are doing our best to make Canada, not that this is a race or anything like that, but we're doing our best because we think that the Canadian milieu, especially with the media the way it is prime territory.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with you. I think you have much a better chance at it and a better shot at it than us.
And when you look, Jerry, at the geopolitical implications of this, especially in terms of what these craft have as a propulsion system, with what their energy source is, that alone in itself, if we can find out through contact or even through investigation of what these craft really are, what type of propulsion system they use, this means the end of fossil fuels, Jerry, when you really think about it. Because what can propel these craft at light speed? And it definitely isn't oil, that's for sure.
You got a good
point.
That's
something that really is a very strong sticking point. So extending that logic, extending that line of thinking, let's suppose that we find out, or that the government already knows what that energy source is. If they know what that energy source is, this energy source could solve 95% of the problems we have on the planet in terms of the degradation of the planet. Medical technologies. 28,000 children a day die in Africa because of malaria. Now, if we can find out, or if the American government or any government has access to information about the kinds of energy or technologies that could supersede or at least develop medical technologies that can save 28,000 lives per day, that becomes a moral issue, doesn't it? If they know about this kind of thing,
you're absolutely right.
The technology is there.
And then you talk about back engineering, and if they're doing it, why aren't we using it?
That's the dilemma. That's the hidden truths that are involved in this. And when you deal with those kinds of realities,
and those may be some of the reasons disclosure will have a problem being pulled forward, is that a lot of people are guilty of things.
Exactly, and that's one of the key points. And I think there should be some sort of discussion or discourse about an amnesty for our government, because I do not want to get into a battle with my government, and I do not want to be accusatory with my government, nor do people who are the same mindset as I am in the United States. I think Stephen G. Bassett does not want to get into a battle of calling his government a group of liars. He does not want to do that. He wants to work with the government because they are the elected representatives of the people of the United States and the same of Canada. And we need to work together with our government to come forward and say, look, let's be authentic about this. Let's stop the rhetoric. Let's stop the wall of secrecy. Let's knock down this wall of secrecy. Let's deal with the truth embargo and call it what it is, and let's start telling us what the real story is here. Because we all know if this is not a secret. Everybody knows about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's the biggest secret that's not been kept. You know, I always, one of my things I talk about with a buddy of mine, I have no problem with keeping a secret. It's the people that I tell that have the problem.
got a good point there.
When you think about that, this is the biggest non-secret on the planet. Everyone knows that the UFOs exist or there's something going on, but all we need to do is tip that balance, be it with the media or with an honest government, to come forward and say, yes, there is something going on. Now let's just go on with it and let's talk about it in a rational way so that we can become educated and move forward as a race.
Now, since Paul Hellyer came forward at your symposium, any government people talking to him? I mean, I don't want you to give away. Well, I do, actually. I want you to give away the secret.
You know what? To be honest with you, I'm going to tell you that we are going to be making, within probably the next, my guess would be 3 weeks, probably a month, okay? And I want to update you on this. You know, we will be making contact with an arm of our government, with a very significant portion of our government directly. And having hearings about this whole issue. And we will be involving witnesses, we will be involving people like Paul Hellyer at the highest possible level of the committee representation level here in Canada. And that's
So you have something pretty big coming
that's
up.
That's right. There's three coterminous agencies working, or organizations working together. one on the West Coast, one in the States, and us here in Toronto. We are working as a sort of a trilateral group to bring about some pretty serious hearings here up in Canada that are directly related to one of the arms of government here in Canada.
We hear all the time about things happening in the U.S., like we have actually ETs captured or recovered bodies or whatever. Anything like that in Canada?
Not really, no.
Okay.
There's the only thing that we really have here in terms of something really substantive, and it was very substantive, was a fellow named Wilbert Smith. He was a high-level official in the Department of Transport back in the 50s, and he was appropriated funds, set up a station near Shirley's Bay in northern Ontario to monitor electromagnetic activity, supposedly of unknown sources here in Ontario. And he made some very, very discreet contacts with people in Washington about the kinds of things that he was doing and the things that they were doing in Washington. And he has some very close contacts with an official down there. The last name is Sauerbach. And he had some information that the UFO issue in the United States, he received a memo from this individual, Sauerbach, from Washington, that the UFO issue was rated higher than the atomic bomb. And that was his insight, and the memo is freely available on a website for UFO. You may be aware of that. That memo is actually available for people to see. So in terms of the kinds of things that Canada has, that's probably the biggest thing that Canada has in terms of information. There have been some major sightings up here, but nothing to the point of bodies.
No UFO crash underneath the ice in northern Canada and...
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Sure, Harbor, we've done shows on that.
That was a very interesting and still unresolved issue. But in terms of the larger things that happened both in Brazil, the United States, and some places in Europe, we've not been privy to that kind of thing.
Well, we look forward to hearing from you, Victor, when you're ready to make this announcement. And I guess I'll be a gentleman and not bug you about it. But
well, I think I've gone as far as I can go.
Okay.
Probably your listeners can surmise where we're going. At this point, I don't think it would be fair to the other individuals who are working.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, but there is a significant amount of information, and when it does happen, Jerry, I'd be more than willing to come forward and talk about it and use whatever we're going to use whatever facilities we can to break this open, because this is not something that we're doing for any economic aggrandizement on our part. We just want to get the truth out there. We just want to make this something that our government is comfortable talking about. Can you imagine a time when our government will be comfortable talking about this? Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Well, my experience with the government and the military especially, but the government in general, is that a lot of things they think would just be the end of the world if it got out, most people look at it and go, ho-hum, we've heard about that.
Yeah, and I think we're a mature species, you know, and I think that we can handle this. We're big boys and girls.
Mm-hmm.
It may take us some time to adjust, but the fact that there are extraterrestrials visiting the planet and looking over our shoulder and kind of monitoring what's going on, once we get by the fact that they're not here to do anything, and once we can get the entertainment industry to get off our back and stop making these horrid movies like War of the Worlds and Independence Day and the scare factor and making us fear these people, if these people wanted to do, or if they were as powerful as some people think they are, or as ugly as they think they are, they would have done horrid things to us long before this. And they've been around here for centuries. And I think that there's a lot of evidence to say that they're just sitting back and watching and waiting for us to develop to a point where we're ready to hear what
but
they say.
But even when we go to the zoo, we sometimes make an effort to talk to the animals.
And they haven't.
Yeah. We're nicer to the animals than we are to ourselves.
Well, I wonder... you would think of the different species, maybe someday one of them might actually I guess there's something to that prime directive from Star Trek.
You know, and the more I think about that, Jerry, I know, and I've been a Star Trek fan since day one. I just, doesn't matter. I'll watch any episode of it. And that whole prime directive thing means a whole lot to me. And I think that stand away, kind of watch, look, and listen is the wisdom of the universe. There is a wisdom out there that says that, look at... we need to kind of keep our distance, and we don't want to start messing around with people who may become very frightened about what's going on, or just don't have the capacity to collectively understand what we're all about.
There's the unintended consequences and everything, you know, I don't do they have Halloween in Canada like the. The reason I ask, I just did a Halloween show yesterday in which. Fellow was talking to me about seeing a ghost, and he recognized the ghost, and it was himself. And so the insinuation was that it was time traveling, or whatever. And there may be repercussions to these things. So you mentioned interdimensional and able to transverse huge distances of galaxies. There may be things that we just don't understand if they did interfere.
One of the things that I think people need to understand, and I think this is a very important perspective, is that when all is said and done, when this thing plays itself out, Jerry, it may be something totally different than you and I could ever possibly imagine. We kind of think that we know what's going on.
Yeah. I'm with you. I describe it as a nuts and bolts thing. Yeah, they're from another galaxy, another planet, and you know, but extraterrestrial, but. There may be more to it than that.
That we just don't understand. It's the old question: if we don't know what we don't know, you know. And I think that's the position we're in. And we're, you know, in so many different ways that we're a race of people with so much potential. The spirit, the human spirit, is so strong, it's so powerful, and it's indomitable in a lot of ways. But in other ways, we're so weak and so fragile. And I think that those two polemics, those two extremes of the human species, are what make us unique. And I think that's one of the things that they're interested in, because we have this immense frailties, these immense weaknesses that we have as a human species, but we also have this indomitable spirit, this desire to go forward with things, and this intellectual capacity to want to learn more and more and more. And I think that's why the ETs are interested. If you asked that question a little bit earlier, why are they interested? I think we have something that they don't understand, too, in the same way that we may not understand what they're all about. So it's something that we just have to kind of wait, look, listen, and be very, very patient and very circumspect about it, and just hope things unfold, and that the truth is something that we get to cherish and not become fearful of.
I think that's a good way to end the show, Victor.
I think so, too, Jerry.
Okay, we'll look forward to hearing from you when you get a little closer to your next revelation.
Oh, beautiful. It's been great talking to you, and all the best with the show, and we'll stay in touch.
Okay, thank you very much.
All the best now. Bye-bye.
Good night.